Thank you for tuning back into Cinema Central. I'm your host, DJ Ace, and we are continuing the MCU Roundup. This is part two of my Marvel Cinematic Universe review, and in part one, I covered the movies Iron Man through Captain America. Part two, we'll cover Guardians of the Galaxy through Black Panther. And you know what, to be quite honest, this is a ludicrously deep dive into the MCU, where I will be going over the plot points and connections of each film. This is all in preparation, of course, for Avengers Infinity War coming out on April 27th. So we're going to jump right into this thing. Spoilers, obviously, for all of these movies. And we are going to get started with Guardians of the Galaxy, which came out in 2014, directed by James Gunn. And let's be perfectly honest, until this movie came out, most people didn't even know who the Guardians of the Galaxy actually were, except for like all the comic book fans out there, which I knew who they were, but that's besides the point. All right, in 1988 on Earth, we see a young Peter Quill listening to the Awesome Mix Volume 1 cassette tape, and his mom dies in a hospital, and his grandpa's there, but he doesn't take her hand at the end, which is really sad. And then he gets abducted by aliens. Like, how typical is that, right? Anyway, 26 years later on Planet Moray, Peter Quill, played by Chris Pratt, still has the tape player. And that second song hits, Come and Get Your Love. It was at this moment that you probably realized this was going to be a special Marvel film. He goes and salvages this cool orb-looking thing. And then these fellas try to take it from him. And he tells them that his name is Star-Lord, and then they're like, who? And then he escapes on this ship, and there's this alien chick on board wearing the same shirt he had on when he got abducted when he was a kid in 1989, fun fact. There's a news report on the TV talking about riots on the Kree homeworld after they signed a peace treaty with the Nova Corps on Xandar. Yondu calls Peter and mentions that his crew wanted to eat him as a kid. Peter cuts him off, and then Yondu puts a bounty on his head. One of Yondu's crew mentions that they were supposed to deliver Quill to somebody. Deep in space on the Dark Aster, a Kree warship, we meet the villain Ronan the Accuser, played by Lee Pace, who is very unhappy with this peace treaty. We meet Nebula and Gamora. Nebula is played by Karen Gillian, and Gamora is played by Zoe Saldana. They are there as part of a deal with Thanos. Dun, dun, dun. On Xandar, we meet two colorful characters named Groot, voiced by Vin Diesel, and Rocket, voiced by Bradley Cooper. We also see Stan Lee hitting on some alien chick, and Peter goes to meet this guy called the Broker, who turns down the deal. Then Gamora, Groot, and Rocket all come after Peter, and they all get snagged by the Nova Corps. There's this interesting communication between Nova Corps and the Kree about possibly stopping Ronan, and the Kree are like, not our business. And then there's a lot of interesting information as this ragtag bunch of galactic misfits gets processed for prison. They mentioned that Nebula and Gamora are both adopted daughters of Thanos. On Star-Lord's screen, it mentions that he has a translator implant in his neck. It also mentions one count of illegal manipulation of the Grimosian Duchess. Whatever that means. Under known associates, it includes Yondu, who I forgot to mention is played by Michael Rooker. Also under known associates, it includes Kraglin, who is played by Sean Gunn, the director's brother, who also stands in for Rocket on the set in a green onesie. Speaking of Kraglin, though, this is the one and only time I think they ever mention his last name, Obfenteri. They all get sent to prison, the kiln, and Rocket says he's busted out of 22 prisons, so they're all going to get out of there very soon. Apparently, all that Groot can say is, I am Groot, and everyone basically wants to kill Gamora. There's this one inmate that gives her the finger across the throat gesture, and the guards let the prisoners take her. Then Drax the Destroyer shows up, played by Dave Bautista, and he wants to kill her himself. Then Peter Quill comes to save her life and has to explain the whole finger across the throat thing to Drax, and the inmate we saw using it earlier denies knowing anything about it. The other, that weird emissary guy from the Avengers that I mentioned in part one, he summons Ronan to talk to Thanos, who at this point is being voiced by Josh Brolin, but it is uncredited. And they talk about Gamora betraying Ronin. And this is, of course, the first time Thanos speaks, and it's very intimidating. Our heroes all escape the kiln, and apparently Drax doesn't understand metaphors. Peter has to go back for his tape player, and then after they escape, Ronin shows up a little bit later and kills everyone. Also, Yondu goes and questions the broker, and we see his sweet, cool-looking arrow for the first time. And then our heroes go to the planet of nowhere, but it's not really a planet because it's actually the severed head of an ancient celestial. And they're going there to go sell the orb. Gamora reveals that Thanos actually killed her parents, and then Peter tells her the legend of Footloose and Kevin Bacon. It's a good movie, by the way. They go meet the buyer, who is the Collector, that same dude we met at the post-credits of Thor the Dark World. In his collection, we see a dark elf, a Chitauri, a Russian space dog, and a bunch of other stuff. And he tells us about the Infinity Stones. Dun, dun, dun. Which also reveals that the Aether and the Tesseract are also Infinity Stones. So we've already seen those in The Avengers and Thor the Dark. He also mentions that a group of individuals could possibly control a stone for a short amount of time before being eviscerated. And then the orb that they've been carrying around has one of the Infinity Stones in it. And then one of the collector slaves grabs it and blows herself up and blows up the entire collection. Drax called Ronin because he wants revenge on Ronin for killing his family. And then there's a big space chase where Nebula drops this little line saying, "Of all of our siblings, I hated you the least." This is to Gamora. Ronin almost kills Drax and takes the stone, and then Quill calls Yondu to rescue Gamora. Ronin decides, though, that he's better than Thanos and keeps the stone for himself, and then Peter and Yondu make nice. And they talk about the whole eating thing, you know. Obviously, that was just a joke. Anyway, Rocket and Drax and Groot show up to rescue Quill, but they don't really need to, and then they all get together to make a plan to steal back the stone before Ronin can use it to destroy Xandar. Kraglin mentions that Ronin is using Sakaaran soldiers. This is as opposed to Kree soldiers, because obviously he is doing unsanctioned actions against other species that the Kree aren't really on board with. So obviously he can't use his own people. Everyone goes to Xandar for a big showdown. The Nova Corps does this cool fighter shield thing, and Yondu kills a small army with his arrow. Nebula decides to leave, and that dude from the beginning on Morag, that his name is Korath, calls Peter Star-Lord and is very happy about that. And then the Dark Aster crashes into a planet, and Groot saves everyone, saying, "We are Groot." And then Ronin survives everything they threw at him, and he calls them out. The Guardians of the Galaxy is like a jab, and then obviously they keep the name. And then Star-Lord challenges to a dance contest, the only logical thing left to do. And then they blow up the hammer, and Peter grabs the Infinity Stone. And Gamora offers her hand to Peter, and he has a flashback of his mom. So this is like reconciliation of that moment from his childhood. And then they all join hands and control the stone long enough to kill Ronin, because the Collector told us that it was possible earlier in the film. Kraglin mentions that it's probably good they didn't give Peter to his dad like they were hired to do. And then Nova Corps mentions Peter is only half human and that his dad is something ancient, which is why he could hold the stone, probably. Nova Corps also rebuilt his ship, and then he opens this present from his mom that he's been holding on to this entire time, and it had the Awesome Mix Volume 2 tape inside of it. And Nova Corps keeps the Infinity Stone, and a new Groot sprouts up from one of the branches of the old Groot. It's weird. Anyway, post-credit scene, we see Dancing Groot and Drax, like, staring at him, and it's really funny. And at the very end, we see the Collector sitting there sipping on some something, and then Howard the Duck is there for no apparent reason. The Avengers Age of Ultron came out in 2015, directed again by Joss Whedon. The second Avengers movie picks up with the end of the Winter Soldier events. The Avengers have been wrapping up things, taking out all the other Hydra bases except the last one, Strucker's base, and we met Strucker at the post-credits of Winter Soldier, and he's in Sokovia, and he has Loki's staff. Tony has this thing called the Iron Legion, which he uses to, I guess, protect people while the Avengers fight. And there's lots of fighting that does occur. Hawkeye gets wounded, and then Thor uses his hammer on Cap's shield, which is a little callback to the first Avengers. Tony finds a secret lab, and Black Widow uses a key phrase to turn the Hulk back into Banner. Captain America captures Strucker, and we meet the twins, Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, which were at the end of the post-credits of Winter Soldier as well. Scarlet Witch also puts the whammy on Tony, who sees all the Avengers dead in a vision, and he takes Loki's scepter. Back at Avengers Tower, previously Stark Tower, there's a Battle of New York monument below the building. Agent Hill shows up and tells us about the twins, Wanda, played by Elizabeth Olsen, and Pietro, played by Aaron Taylor Johnson. Maximoff. They're the Maximoff twins. This one lady named Dr. Helen Cho shows up to fix Hawkeye. Barton mentions he doesn't have a girlfriend. And then Banner agrees to help Tony use the scepter to make the Ultron AI, something Tony been wanting to make to, like, protect the world or something. Tony mentions Veronica, and Banner mentions helping design it. They work for a while, and then they go to a party. And then while they're away at the party, Ultron, voiced by James Spader, awakens and zaps Jarvis. Rhodey and Sam Wilson show up for the party. There are mentions of Pepper Potts and Jane Foster. And Stan Lee is there playing a veteran and drinks Thor's Asgardian ale. Black Widow and Banner have this romance. Cap mentions that he's seen her flirt, probably talking about when they kissed each other in Winter Soldier. And then they all try to lift Thor's hammer, which is really fun. And Barton makes his comment saying, you know, I've seen this before, right? Because he has seen this before in the first Thor movie. Cap actually managed to nudge the hammer a little bit, which is cool. And then Ultron shows up and he attacks everyone using the Iron Legion. And he steals Loki's scepter. The Maximoffs meet up with Ultron, and then Ultron kills Strucker in prison. They all look up this arms dealer named Ulysses Klaue, played by Andy Serkis. And this arms dealer has a particular brand on his neck that stands for Thief from an African country called Wakanda, which is where vibranium obviously is from. At the salvage yard off the coast of Africa, Ultron cuts off Klaue's arm and steals his vibranium. And then the Avengers show up and Wanda puts the whammy on all of them, making them see different things. Widow sees a memory from her past, Steve sees the dance that he missed, Thor sees a vision of things to come, and Banner turns into Rage Monster Hulk. Barton does not get the whammy because he zaps Wanda in the head with an arrow, and it's hilarious. Tony destroys Ultron's current form, and then he calls in Veronica, which is actually a satellite containing the Hulkbuster armor, and then he fights the Hulk with it in a city. Great idea. It's not a great plan, actually. It's a terrible idea. Tony actually punches out the Hulk's tooth, which is a fun little callback to the Hulk movie when the Hulk punched out Abomination's tooth. Hulk eventually calms down long enough for Iron Man to knock him out. Barton takes them all to his safe house where he actually has a family. Barton's wife finally name drops Hawkeye for the first time, and Thor flies off. Ultron goes ahead and puts a whammy on Dr. Cho to make him a new body. Natasha and Banner have this romance thing going on, and we find out neither one of them can have kids. Nick Fury shows up to talk to Tony, and then Thor grabs Dr. Selvig, and they go to the Waters of Sight. Ultron reveals that there's an Infinity Stone inside of the scepter, and Thor gets a new vision. While Ultron is transferring his consciousness to the new body, Wanda can read his thoughts and sees his real plan to destroy the world. Barton, Cap, and Widow go after Ultron and the Cradle in South Korea, and the Maximoffs end up betraying Ultron. Ultron does capture Natasha, and the Avengers get the Cradle. Banner and Tony decide to finish the job by putting Jarvis into the new body. Oh, and by the way, Jarvis isn't actually dead. He's just been on the internet keeping Ultron away from the nuclear launch codes. Good job, Jarvis. Barton locates Natasha, and then Cap tries to stop Tony from completing the body. And then Thor comes in and charges the cradle, and the android awakens and is called Vision, and he's played by Paul Bettany, and he has the Mind Stone in his head. And he also picks up Thor's hammer. Tony puts a new AI in the Iron Man suit named Friday, and the fight goes back to Sokovia. Ultron lifts half the country into the air, and Fury shows up with the old helicarrier from Avengers, and also War Machine shows up to help evacuate the citizens. Quicksilver saves Hawkeye and dies. Hulk takes the Quinjet and leaves. Wanda kills Ultron. Vision saves Wanda. Thor and Tony destroy the city before it can hit the planet. And they meet up at a new Avengers facility in upstate New York. Then Thor leaves to find answers about Infinity Stones. Post-credit scene, Thanos grabs the Infinity Gauntlet saying, "Fine, I'll do it myself." And we're going to see how that goes really soon. Ant-Man came out in 2015, starts out in 1989, where the Triskelion is still under construction, and we see a meeting between Peggy Carter, Howard Stark, and Hank Pym, played by Michael Douglas, and this other guy. Hank is mad at them for trying to reproduce his formula, the Pym particle, and the other guy mentions his wife, and Hank punches him in the face. Then Hank leaves S.H.I.E.L.D. In the present, we meet Scott Lang, played by Paul Rudd, and he's getting punched in the face in prison, and then he gets released from prison. His old cellmate, Luis, picks him up from the prison and remarks on his scar from also getting punched in the face a year ago. They mention Scott has a daughter and that he was in prison for 3 years, and he ends up working at Baskin-Robbins, but as we all know, Baskin-Robbins always finds out if you're an ex-con. At the apartment, we meet some of Luis's new friends, Dave and Kurt, and they talk about the Vista job, which is the thing that Scott did to get in prison in the first place. Vista Corp, he found out the company was stealing millions, and he blew the whistle and got fired for it. So then he hacked the company and returned the money to the people and dumped all the records on the internet. And he prefers the term burglar, not robber. And much older Hank Pym gets invited back to his company building. We see his keys have a tank keychain. And we meet his daughter, Hope, played by Evangeline Lilly, and Darren Cross. Darren Cross is basically the guy in charge now. He plays some videos of footage of the Ant-Man in the 80s and unveils his new Yellow Jacket suit, which is the miniaturized military suit. Scott Lang crashes his daughter's birthday party at his ex-wife's house, and we meet her fiancé, Paxton, who is a cop. Hank leaves, but it's important to note that he honks the crazy horn on the van he was borrowing. We see Darren Cross kill some dude in a gruesome way, and then when Scott realizes he can't pay child support anytime soon, he asks Luis about this new job. They break into this house and we see a familiar set of keys on the table by the door. Scott breaks the safe and finds a suit. Hank was watching on a camera the whole time, puts on the suit and shrinks for the first time. He tries to return the suit but gets arrested. It turns out that Hank Pym had paid someone to drop the tip about his safe. Hank then gives the suit to Scott to escape police custody, and he wakes up in Hank's house later the next day. And he meets Hope for the first time, who was actually the one who called the cops on him to begin with. Hank hid the formula after inventing it over 40 years ago, and Darren Cross was his apprentice, but Hank wouldn't help him make the particle. Darren forced him out of his own company, and Hope made the deciding vote. Hope came back to Hank when Darren was getting close to figuring out the formula. Darren's formula is unstable and is affecting his brain, though, making him crazy. And we find out the buyer is named Mitchell Carson. He's the guy that Hank punched in the beginning of the movie. And he is the ex-head of defense for S.H.I.E.L.D. Hank mentions he can't wear the suit himself anymore. Something about being too old or whatever. And then Hank tells Scott to never mess with the regulator. Remember, everybody, never mess with the regulator. Scott names this one Flying Ant Antony. How original. And then Scott has this heart-to-heart with Hope, mentioning that he's, like, expendable, which is why he's there. Hank tells Hope what really happened to her mother. She was the original Wasp, and she went subatomic to stop a nuclear strike on the U.S. The last step in the planning process was to steal one of Hank's old inventions from an old Stark warehouse in upstate New York. Unfortunately, that warehouse is now an Avengers facility, and Scott meets Sam Wilson, and he name drops Falcon. Scott beats Falcon by going inside of his suit and disabling it, and then later that day, Darren visits Hank at his house. His paranoia increases, and he ups security. Scott brings in the rest of his crew for the heist. Paxton shows up to arrest Hank, and Scott proceeds with the mission. Dave honks the van horn, which Paxton heard before at the birthday party, and Hank is able to go back into the building. Turns out that Carson was part of Hydra, no surprise there. And then Cross pulls out the yellow jacket just before Ant-Man's about to grab it, reveals Ant-Man as Scott Lang, and then Cross reveals he's going to kill Hank the other night, and then Hank gets shot, and then Scott goes after Cross, and then Carson, here, this is a key point, Carson runs off with a vial of Cross's formula. Turns out the tank is not just a keychain, it's an actual tank, and then Anthony dies, which this is weird, because I never thought I'd feel sad for a bug, but okay. And then they destroy the building, making it implode. And then we get this cool Ant-Man versus Yellowjacket scene where Scott swats him into a bug lamp. And then Scott gets arrested by Paxton again. But Cross goes after his daughter Cassie. And then he gets hit by Thomas the Tank Engine. And it's really funny. And Scott has to go subatomic to stop Cross. And he enters the quantum realm. But he comes back because he uses a special enlarging disc on the regulator. And then everything's good. He's good with his family. Luis gives him a new tip. Stan Lee's the bartender. And Falcon is looking for Ant-Man. And there's a Spider-Man reference. Post-credits, Hank shows Hope the new Wasp suit. And there's a Civil War tease at the end. Captain America's Civil War came out in 2016 and was directed by the Russo brothers. Why is it that every Captain America film just has to make, like, huge impacts on the MCU? Civil War is a big one. They call it Avengers 2.5, and it's a doozy, and that, again, it changes the landscape of the MCU. We get a flashback in 1991 where we see this facility that Bucky was kept in and the red book that activates him. It's funny to note that one of the words is homecoming. And we see him do one of his missions. Okay. In present day, the new Avengers are hunting down Rumlo, known now as Crossbones, in Lagos, who of course survived Winter Soldier. Rumlo hits the Institute for Infectious Diseases and steals a vial. Natasha secures the vial, and Rumlo fights Cap, and taunts him by mentioning Bucky. Then he tries to blow them both up, but Wanda stops him and throws him into the air, where he explodes into a nearby building, and people die. Tony is giving a presentation at MIT, and we see a holographic representation of his last memory with his parents. Pepper Potts was on the prompter, but she was not actually there. And this Sokovia victim seeks out Tony and tells him about her dead son. There's a newsreel about Lagos and that 11 Wakandans were killed on an outreach in the country. King T'Chaka makes a statement, and the Avengers meet with the new Secretary of State, Thaddeus Ross, aka Thunderbolt Ross, the same crazy general that tore up half a country in The Incredible Hulk. This is very fascinating. This is actually very cool. Played by the same guy, William Hurt. He shows footage from their various conflicts, and bam, he lays out the Sokovia Accords drawn up by the United Nations. Thus starts a rift between the Avengers. Back in sunny old Cleveland, this guy named Zemo breaks into a Russian's house. Zemo mentions he was able to find him using the files that Black Widow dumped on the internet. He asks him about a mission report on December 16, 1991, and then Zemo kills the guy and grabs a red book. The Avengers argue about the Accords for a bit, and then Steve gets a text and heads over to London for Peggy Carter's funeral, which is a sad moment, to be quite honest. Turns out Agent 13 from the Winter Soldier movie is actually Sharon Carter, her granddaughter. How about that? Sam and Natasha also went there. There's this touching eulogy about being a tree, and then we find out the United Nations is meeting in Vienna to approve the Accords. We meet Prince T'Challa for the first time, played by Chadwick Boseman. T'Chaka, the king, gives this speech mentioning that Wakanda was trying to reach out to the rest of the world in Lagos. And then there's an explosion and T'Chaka dies. The news pegs the Winter Soldier, Bucky Barnes, for the bombing. Natasha tells Steve to stay away, but he's actually just like across the street. Sharon actually works in Berlin, and she helps Steve and Sam find Bucky. We see Zemo in a hotel learning the Red Book passphrases, and he has a device in his closet. How suspicious. Bucky is actually in Bucharest. I don't know where that is in relation to anything, but that's where he is. And Cap finds him in his apartment, and they have this little talk. And then German special forces arrive and just blow everything up. Then Black Panther shows up chasing Bucky, and the chase ends when War Machine shows up. Black Panther is, of course, T'Challa. And then Vision and Wanda are back at Avengers HQ, kind of watching all this go down from a distance. In Berlin, they're all in this convoy going back to like the CIA base, and they pass this delivery van. T'Challa name drops Black Panther as the protector of Wakanda, and we meet Everett Ross, the deputy chief, played by Martin Freeman. Tony is there, and he mentions him and Pepper are actually on a break, which is surprising. And also probably means that Gwyneth Paltrow was almost done with the contract. Tony almost convinces Steve to sign the Accords, but he doesn't. And then the UN psychiatrist shows up to interrogate Barnes. That delivery van drops off its package at the power station, and it turns out it's an EMP. And Zemo is impersonating the Shrink. And he activates the EMP, cutting off the power, and he pulls out the red book and starts reciting the passphrase. It's worth noting that Bucky could have obviously broke out at any time he wanted to. But then Bucky turns back into the Winter Soldier, and Zemo asks him about the same mission report, and then Bucky goes on a rampage. And he fights Natasha, who remarks that you could at least recognize me. And he fights Tony, and he fights T'Challa, and he fights Steve. And then Steve literally grabs a helicopter. We all know which scene I'm talking about. And then we see Zemo listening to some phone messages and is on his way to Russia. Steve saves Bucky and puts him in this giant vice thing and talks to him. And Bucky tells them there are more Winter Soldiers made from a serum he jacked in 91. Then we see that Ant-Man post-credits scene. Ross, the other Ross, the Thunderbolt Ross, gives Tony 36 hours to bring them all in. Tony recruits Peter Parker / Spider-Man, played by Tom Holland. We get the great power speech. And there's this funny moment where Tony tells him to move the leg. Tom Holland actually forgot the blocking for the scene, but they just rolled with it, and it's kind of awesome. Hawkeye comes to break out Wanda, and Wanda puts the whammy on Vision. And then Sharon gives Cap his gear, and they kiss, and it's adorable. And Hawkeye also got Ant-Man. Then there's the iconic airport confrontation. Tony calls Spider-Man under ruse. And then Ant-Man jumps inside the Iron Man suit, which is what he did to Falcon. And then there's some playful and not so playful banter between the heroes. Ant-Man turns into Giant Man, and then Natasha helps Cap and Bucky escape. Peter mentions that old Star Wars movie to start Ant-Man. And then Vision misses Falcon and hits Rhodes, who crashes into the ground. Zemo calls room service, and they find a body in his room, that in that hotel. And Natasha has to run for helping Cap and Bucky. Turns out Rhodes, like, shattered his spine. Tony Stark is starting to put the pieces together. The body in the room was the real UN shrink. Zemo was part of a Sokovian intelligence and leader of a kill squad, and he used prosthetics to impersonate Barnes. Tony talks to Sam Wilson on the Raft, a Supermax prison for superheroes, and Tony tells Ross he can call anytime so he can put him on hold. Black Panther follows Tony, and then Cap, Bucky, and Tony enter the facility in Russia, but Zemo's already there and had killed the other Winter Soldiers. Zemo plays this tape from Mission Report December 16th, 1991, shows Bucky killing Tony's parents. In the video, Howard Stark recognized Barnes. Cap knew and didn't say anything, and then Tony kind of goes bananas and legitimately tries to kill Bucky. Tony blows off Bucky's metal arm, and then there's the iconic comic book shot of Cap and Iron Man clashing. Zemo tells his sad story to T'Challa, then tries to kill himself, but T'Challa stops him. Tony and Steve go at it for a while. You know, he's my friend, so was I. It's all very sad. And then Steve goes, "I can do this all day," which is a callback to the first Avenger. Cap beats Tony in the end, leaving his shield behind. Vision, Tony, and Rhodes are all that's left at Avengers HQ. The postman that delivers Steve's package is Stan Lee, calling him Tony Stank. Cap's message to Tony is interesting, and then Ross calls Tony and he puts him on hold. And then Steve goes and busts out the others from the Raft. Post-credits, we see Cap leaving Bucky and Wakanda so they can get the programming out of his head, and Peter Parker gets to keep the suit. You guys ready to get weird? Because we're about to talk about Doctor Strange, which came out in 2016. Cool thing, this is the first movie in the MCU to use the new credit roll at the start, and I love that credit roll every time. The movie opens up at this ancient temple where these bad guys steal secret pages and cut off the librarian's head. This other hooded figure calls out the bad guy named Master Caecilius, played by Mads Mikkelsen, who calls this person a hypocrite. There's a crazy fight scene in New York, but the bad guys get away. Meet Dr. Stephen Strange, a super rich and super smart neurosurgeon, also super arrogant, and which of course seems to be a running theme with MCU characters. On his way to a conference, he's driving his Lamborghini really fast down the road and he gets a phone call about potential cases. His agent mentions an Air Force colonel with a severed spine from operating experimental armor, which is a callback to Civil War. He gets distracted and crashes his Lambo and his airbags don't deploy and his hands get smashed. There are two very important lessons in this movie, everybody. Don't drive distracted. Number two, make sure your airbags are going to work. I've said enough. Okay, moving on. His hands get smashed and he can't be a surgeon anymore and he spends all of his money trying to fix his hands. This therapist tells him of a man that miraculously recovered from debilitating injuries. And he finds a guy, Jonathan Pangborn, who says he found a teacher and he took the miracle and he left with darker secrets behind. And he tells Steven to find Carmitage. Steven goes to Nepal and he is followed by a hooded man who saves him from getting mugged in an alley. The stranger takes Strange to Carmitage and the Ancient One, played by Tilda Swinton. Then there's a massive acid trip, and they throw Strange out. The hooded man is, of course, Mordo. Or is it Mordu? I think it's Mordu. I don't know. It could go either way. Played by Chiwetel Ejiofor, and he convinces the Ancient One to let Strange stay. And the Wi-Fi password is Shambhala. So if you're ever near Carmitage and you need Wi-Fi, Shambhala. The watch Steven is wearing is from Christine Palmer, played by Rachel McAdams, his doctor friend. Strange meets the new librarian, Wong, played by Benedict Wong. I'm not even kidding. And he takes Strange down to the Master's Library and points out the Ancient One's private collection, which has the Book of Cagliostro, the Study of Time. The villain, Caecilius, and his acolytes enact some dark ritual to gain dark powers, and Strange struggles with his training, and the Ancient One leaves him on Mount Everest, and Mordo remarks, "Not again," which I thought was really funny. So that forces Steven to use his sling ring to get back to the temple. He also learns about the mirror dimension, this like safe place for sorcerers to fight without the real world noticing. Mordo mentions that the Ancient One is possibly Celtic, which has some interesting implications. I'm thinking like King Arthur implications. Strange finds the Eye of Agamotto in the library, which has the power to manipulate time, and he uses it to restore the pages in the Book of Cagliostro. The missing pages mentions Dormammu and the Dark Dimension and Eternal Life, and then it gets yelled at for temporal manipulation, which can cause paradoxes and time loops. So, another lesson learned. Don't do the temporal manipulation, guys. That's all you gotta do. Which doesn't actually hold true in this movie. You'll see. Strange mentions that he has a photographic memory, which is why he's so smart. The first Sorcerer Supreme was apparently Agamotto, and he made the three Sanctums to defend the Earth from other dimensions. Dormammu is their greatest threat, the master of the Dark Dimension, and the Sorcerers protect the Sanctums. Strange ends up fighting Caecilius and his goons in the New York Sanctum on 177A Bleecker Street. He gets the Cloak of Levitation, and then he gets stabbed and he has to go to a hospital. And then he has a fight in the astral planes, and he kills an acolyte using a defibrillator. Strange confronts the Ancient One, and then Caecilius returns, and Strange puts them in the mirror dimension where things get super trippy. And we see Stan Lee is reading a book on a bus. The Ancient One shows up again, and she gets killed, surprisingly. And Strange has this astral conversation with the Ancient One, where she admits she was using Dark Dimension energy to extend her life, which is what Caecilius found out, why he also went crazy. And then Strange goes to save the world. The Hong Kong Sanctuary ends up getting destroyed and the Dark Dimension enters Earth. Strange uses the Eye of Agamotto to turn back time, but it gets stopped prematurely. And then Strange goes into the Dark Dimension, a place that is apparently without time, and traps Dormammu in a time loop, saying, "Dormammu, I've come to bargain," over and over and over and over and over and over, and it's very funny. Dormammu leaves Earth and takes Caecilius and his goons with him. Mordo actually leaves with this foreboding line, "The bill comes due, always." And then Strange puts the eye back in the library and Wong reveals it to be an Infinity Stone. He also mentions that word will spread that the Sorcerer Supreme is dead, and Strange goes to the New York Sanctum. Post-credit scene, Thor and Doctor Strange are looking for Odin, and then post-post-credit scene, Mordo goes after Pangborn, and he goes crazy and steals the magic, saying there's too many sorcerers. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 came out in 2017, also directed by James Gunn. Starts with Peter's dad and his mom, Meredith Quill, listening to the song Brandy in Missouri in 1980. 34 years later, the Guardians of the Galaxy get hired to kill an interdimensional space squig for these people called the Sovereign, and the song Mr. Blue Sky plays, and Baby Groot is dancing. And he freezes when Drax looks at him, a callback to the post-credits of Volume 1. They kill the thing after semantics, and then Sovereign High Priestess gives them Nebula as a reward. Rocket steals some of the Anorak's batteries. Peter likes Gamora, obviously. And then the Sovereign attack their ship. Peter and Rocket have this argument. And we are introduced to this interesting concept of physical points in space that you have to go to jump like through hyperspace to different planets. Then this mysterious stranger blows up the fleet of Sovereign vessels. They're all drones anyway, so no one is harmed, and they crash land on planet Bearheart. The stranger reveals himself to be Ego, played by Kurt Russell, Peter's dad. What? On planet Centraxia, we see Howard Duck, of course, call back to the first Guardians. And we see the Ravagers with Yondu. And we meet Stakar, another Ravager leader played by Stallone, who mentions there are 100 Ravager factions. Stakar also mentions that Yondu broke the code by dealing in children. The Sovereign shows up and offers Yondu a deal to go after the Guardians of the Galaxy. Ego mentions that he had hired Yondu to pick Peter up, but he clearly never delivered him when he was supposed to. But once he heard tales of Star-Lord holding an Infinity Stone, he knew that it could only be his son. Peter tells Gamora his David Hasselhoff story, and then the team splits up. Peter, Gamora, and Drax go with Mantis and Ego. Rocket, Groot, and Nebula stay with the ship. Mantis is this alien that has empathic powers and can also control feelings. She helps Ego sleep. The Ravagers find their ship. Turns out Yondu put a tracker on it on Xandar in the first film. And then Kraglin calls out Yondu for being too soft on Quill all the time. And then Nebula blows off his headpiece that controls his arrow. Turns out Baby Groot had let Nebula out. Back on Ego's planet, he mentions that he is also a Celestial, a concept we were also introduced to in the first Guardians, and that the planet is actually him. There's a mutiny on Yondu's ship. A lot of people get killed. Nebula gets a new hand and tells her backstory to Kraglin, mentions that every time she lost a fight to Gamora, Thanos replaced body parts with mechanical ones. Ego tells Peter the reason he didn't return to Earth is because he has to periodically return to his planet. And then they have a thing where he tells him about the light, and then he sees that Peter can harness that power, and he is really, really, really excited that Peter can do that. And they play catch, like a father-son thing, and it's very cute. Manta tries to tell Drax something, and then back on Yondu's ship, while in a cell, Yondu mentions he was a Kree battle slave for 20 years before Stakar freed him. They try to get Groot to get Yondu's other headpiece, but he fails, and then Kraglin brings it to them, saying he's sorry. Yondu kills the whole crew, including Taserface. And then Yondu, Groot, and Kraglin go to Ego's planet, and they have to, you know, use hyperspace jumps to do it. And Yondu mentions that it's not healthy to do more than 50 jumps at a time, and then it turns out they're about to do 700. Peter and Gamora talk about this unspoken thing between them, and then Nebula shows up trying really, really hard to kill Gamora, and then the two sisters have this heart-to-heart. And then Ego puts a whammy on Peter and spills his master plan to make the whole universe himself in the expansion. Manta tells Drax and Gamora the big evil scheme. And during the 700 jumps, we see Stan Lee talking to these aliens known as Watchers. And this is James Gunn just giving us this huge fan service because of all these Stan Lee cameos. It's long been theorized that Stan Lee could conceivably be a Watcher, and then we see him chilling out with the aliens known as Watchers. We just can't call them Watchers because Fox owns the rights for whatever reason. If you're a comic book fan, you know what just happened there. And if you don't know, the Watchers are these alien species that watch. That's literally all they do, and they can't intervene with anything. And so he's talking to these Watchers about the time he was a Federal Express man. So, Civil War. Yondu and Rocket have a moment. Yondu also mentions that his parents sold him into slavery, which is dark. Ego needed an offspring to complete his plan, and Yondu was the one that brought his children to him, and then Ego killed them all because they were worthless for his plan. Yondu and Rocket take this cool drill ship he used to rob the bank of Ascavari. That's kind of a subtle callback to the first Guardians of the Galaxy in the Kiln prison. Peter and Drax have this conversation about how Peter did it with this Oscavarian this one time. So there it is. As Yondu and Rocket go to the planet, we see that the planet now has Ego's iconic face on it. And then Ego smashes the tape player, which is kind of sad. The seeds that Ego planted across the universe erupt, and one of them comes up behind a Dairy Queen. Yondu figured out what happened to the other kids, which is why he kept Quill around. And then they all show up and rescue Peter, and then they drill to the center of the planet to drill in and kill Ego. The Sovereign show up and complicate everything, and Mantis uses her powers to put Ego to sleep. And Yondu declares that he's Mary Poppins, y'all. Then Ego wakes back up and Peter's helmet gets destroyed. That's important later. And Yondu's arrow gets broken. And the expansion resumes. Yondu mentions that he doesn't use his head for my arrow. I use my heart. And Peter harnesses the power to fight Ego. And he unleashes the giant Pac-Man. Back on Earth, we see Peter's grandpa running away from the expansion. Rocket gives Yondu a jetpack and a spacesuit, but only one of each. And then they manage to kill Ego, like his brain. Yondu grabs Peter. He uses the rocket pack on himself and puts the spacesuit on Peter. And he drops this, like, this really touching line. He may have been your father, boy, but he wasn't your daddy. And then Yondu dies, saving Peter. They give Yondu a funeral, and the other Ravagers actually show up for it. And then Nebula and Gamora make nice, and Kraglin gives Peter a Zune, and Peter gives Kraglin the repaired arrow. James Gunn is a funny guy, like usual, and he put 5 post-credit scenes in this movie. We see one where Kraglin shoots Drax with the arrow. In the credit roll, we see that Russian space dog. The next scene, we see Sakaar getting his old crew together. The Sovereign High Priestess makes a new creation called Adam. We see Peter's grandpa in the credit roll. We also see Jeff Goldblum in the credit roll as the Grand Master. And the final scene is Teen Groot. And then the actual final scene is Stan Lee stuck on that planet he was talking to the other guys on. It is worth noting that a lot of things happen in the second half of the MCU. We're almost done. We got 3 movies left. Let's keep on trucking. Spider-Man Homecoming came out in 2017. And let's be honest, when Disney strikes a deal with Sony, we all win. The movie opens post-Battle of New York, where Damage Control comes in and takes over all the salvage operations. And we meet this guy named Toomes, played by Michael Keaton, who keeps some contraband. 8 years later, he has this huge black market gun operation and a cool wingsuit. The credit roll opens to the Spider-Man theme song, which is cool. And then it opens with a film by Peter Parker recounting his trip to Germany in Civil War. He gets to keep the Spider-Man suit, and he says goodbye to Tony in a car, who Tony mentions seeing Happy's cardiogram, which is an Iron Man 3 reference, and says, "We'll call you." Then 2 months later, Peter hasn't heard anything, keeps texting Happy with no response, and Peter is currently a student at Midtown Science and Technology. He has one friend named Ned, and he has a crush on a senior named Liz. It turns out he also makes his web fluid at school, and there's this other girl that follows Peter and Ned around for the whole movie. After school, Peter goes to a sandwich shop, and then he strips down in an alley and goes on patrol as Spider-Man. We see Stan Lee as a neighbor named Gary. That night, Spider-Man stops a high-tech bank robbery that blows up that same sandwich shop. Tony sold Avengers Tower and Happy is overseeing the move. Peter loses his backpack and he has to sneak into his apartment, and Ned sees him on the ceiling. Peter has to ask Aunt May for a new backpack. Aunt May remarks it's the 5th one in a month or something like that. Back in school, one of the teachers is talking about the Sokovia Accords. In gym class, the teacher shows Captain America Fitness Challenge video. Ned says he wants to be the guy in the chair, and Peter has to fake being exhausted in gym class, which is funny. And then Ned blurts out that Peter knows Spider-Man. They go to a party at Liz's house, and Peter bails after he sees an explosion in the suburbs, and it's an arms deal. And the salesman mentions owning an Ultron arm blaster, a black hole grenade, which is from For the Dark World, and a Chitauri railgun. Spider-Man chases them and they call Tombs, and Spider-Man passes his house party that's playing Ferris Bueller's Day Off on the TV. And then Tombs shows up in the vulture suit and grabs Spider-Man and drops him 1,000 feet into a lake. Iron Man pulls Spider-Man out and he's actually remote controlling it. Tony tells Peter to be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, and Peter finds the power core from the gun. Tombs accidentally kills one of his employees. He grabbed the wrong gun and vaporized him, which was kind of interesting. And he makes the other guy the new Shocker, while his technician keeps mentioning this high-altitude vacuum seal. The bad guys show up at Parker's high school looking for the energy core, and Peter puts a tracker on them and they all go to DC. Peter also learns that Happy has been tracking him, and Ned helps Peter remove the tracker and deactivate the training wheels protocol. Peter tracks bad guys and finds that his suit has an AI in it, and he can activate recon mode and instant kill, and he has 576 web combinations. And then he learns that the bad guys are in fact robbing damage control trucks. He attacks Vulture, but he gets stuck in the damage control deep storage. He names his AI Karen, and then he has to escape the vault because the power cores are sensitive to radiation, and Ned takes it through security at the Washington Monument, which triggers the power core. The Spider-Man suit also has a recon drone, and Peter saves everyone at the Washington Monument. Back at the school, the teacher mentions losing a kid before, which was kind of grim. And then Peter gets detention and has to watch the Captain America detention video. Peter also keeps his old suit at the school, and he learns about the baby monitor protocol, which has been recording everything he does. He goes and talks to Aaron Davis, the dude from the first arms deal. He uses enhanced interrogation mode, and Aaron Davis mentions that he has a nephew. He tips Spider-Man to the Staten Island Ferry, and the buyer is Mac Gargan. The FBI show up on the ferry, and then Vulture attacks, and the gun explodes, splitting the ferry in half, and Vulture and Shocker bail. Spider-Man almost saves the ferry, but then Tony has to intervene. Back at the shop, Tombs tells Mason to build the high-altitude vacuum seal. Tony talks to Peter in person. Turns out he called the FBI, and then he takes the suit back. And then he says, "If you're nothing without this suit, then you don't deserve it." Peter asks Liz out to homecoming and goes to her house, and her dad opens the door, and by far one of the biggest plot twists in the MCU, her dad's the bad guy. What? Yeah. Tombs puts the pieces together on the car ride to the school and threatens Peter. And then Peter bails on the dance and gets his old suit out, and he gets attacked by Shocker. Ned helps him, and then Peter steals Flash's car to track his phone, which he left in Vulture's car. And then Ned gets to be the guy in the chair. Happy is loading the plane for move day. He mentions Hulk Buster armor pieces, a Captain America prototype shield, and Thor's magic belt. Peter finds Tombs, who gives this whole evil monologue, which is pretty fun, but it was really just to stall for time so he could drop a building on Spider-Man. Tombs goes after the plane, and Spider-Man recovers and goes after Vulture, and they had this huge fight on the plane. Oh, and can we just discuss that one of the engine turbines fall out? That landed on somebody, okay? A freaking airplane engine landed on somebody's house. Like, what if you're just like sitting there watching movies on your couch and then wham! Freaking airplane engine just boom! That would just ruin my day, but that's just me. The plane crashes and they fight on the beach, and then Vulture's suit explodes, but Peter saves him and ties him up with the stuff for Happy to find. The note says, "P.S. Sorry about your plane." at the end, Liz moves to Oregon, probably a smart move. And that one random girl from the whole film is actually named Michelle slash MJ. Happy meets Peter in a bathroom and takes him to Avengers HQ. And Tony meets him there, shows him a new suit, and invites him to join the Avengers. Says there's 50 reporters behind this door, and then Peter turns it down. Pepper Potts comes out, and there turns out to be actual reporters behind the door and asking where the kid was. And then Happy gives Tony the engagement ring he's been holding since 2008, and Tony gives back the spider suit. At the very end of the film, Aunt May sees Peter wearing the suit with a big old WTF, and the post-credits scene, we see Vulture in prison with Scorpion, and he doesn't reveal his identity, and the post-credits scene is a really funny Captain America video about patience. Thor Ragnarok came out in 2017, and it's probably one of the more ridiculous films in the MCU. Opens with Thor stuck in a cage, and he explains what he's been doing for the past 2 years after Age of Ultron, looking for Infinity Stones, and then, more recently, figuring out these visions of Ragnarok, the end of Asgard. He is in the domain of a fire demon known as Searcher, who Odin defeated a long time ago. Says that if his crown is put in the eternal flame, he will destroy Asgard. Searcher tells Thor that Odin is not on Asgard, and then we cue up Immigrant Song, and Thor takes the crown and gets out of Dodge. We meet Scourge, played by Carl Urban, who is the new gatekeeper of Asgard. He mentions Heimdall was branded as a traitor. Thor flies to the palace. There's a statue of Loki, and Odin is watching a play depicting Loki's death. Matt Damon cameos as Loki in the play. Thor mentions the Nine Realms are in chaos and reveals Loki has been impersonating Odin, which pays off all that ending stuff from Thor Ragnarok. They go to Earth to find Odin, and this random girl mentions Thor broke up with Jane, which really just means Natalie Portman didn't want to do it anymore. Doctor Strange shows up, and the post-credit scene is paid off. He helps Thor find Odin, and Odin tells them about Hela, the goddess of death, his actual firstborn, so he's been lying to Thor about that his entire life. Odin's life apparently is the only thing holding Hela back from coming back from somewhere. And then Odin dies, and it's kind of sad. Then Hela emerges, and Thor throws Mjolnir at her, and she smashes it with her bare hand. Loki calls for a transport out, but Hela follows them through it and throws them both out of it. And she gets to Asgard and literally slays Volstagg and Fandral, and then she recruits Scourge for some reason. Thor lands on another planet, gets captured by these indigenous peoples, then he gets rescued by this other chick, and then gets captured by the chick. There's a central tower with statues on the side of it. One is of Beta Ray Bill. That's an obscure comic book reference, but there it is. Hela also slays Hogan and Asgard's army, which in the Dark World is mentioned to be at least 10,000 strong. Thor gets an intro to the planet Sakaar and the Grand Master, played by Jeff Goldblum, and his contest of champions. The person that captured Thor also brought him his current champion. The Grand Master melts this random dude, like literally melts him. And surprise, surprise, Loki is there, and he's been there for weeks. Thor meets the gladiators Korg and Meek. Korg is a Cronian rock monster. And guess what? Thor killed one in the beginning of the Dark World. Hela reveals true Asgard origins to Scourge, how she and Odin tore through the Nine Realms and just kind of butchered everybody until Odin got a conscience. They go into the vault, and she calls out the fake Infinity Gauntlet. This is a callback to the first Thor movie where we saw it in the background. We see the casket of Ancient Winners. We see Searcher's skull and the Tesseract, which Hela says not bad. But she's really there for the Eternal Flame, which she uses to resurrect her undead army and her giant pet wolf Fenrir. The person who captured Thor is a Valkyrie, which was an elite fighting force of female warriors from Asgard. Stan Lee is the barber who cuts Thor's hair. This is just interesting because what really happened was Hemsworth was sick of wearing a wig. And then a contest of champions happens, and we see Thor wearing a helmet for the first time since the first Thor movie. And the Incredible Hulk is the champion, where Thor remarks he's a friend from work. But they fight each other anyway. Thor tries to use the lullaby from Age of Ultron to turn him back into Banner, which it doesn't work. And then he gets the Loki slam, and Loki goes, "That's how it feels!" And it's really funny, a little callback to the Avengers. Thor starts shooting lightning bolts everywhere, and then the Grandmaster zaps Thor, and he gets Hulk smashed. Hela names Scourge her new executioner. Then they notice the Bifrost sword is missing because Heimdall stole it. He's still around, and he's rescuing the Asgard people. And it's worth noting, he cuts down two dudes in a tree in one swing because he is BA. Thor wakes up in Hulk's room, find out the Quinjet that Hulk stole is still on the planet. Heimdall tells Thor where he needs to go. We also see Hulk now has a statue on the main tower, and Thor talks to Valkyrie, and it turns out the Valkyries were sent to stop Hela the first time around. Thor escapes and goes to the Quinjet, tries to sign in, and has to use the name Point Break, which is called back to the first Avengers. Hulk follows him and breaks the Quinjet, and then he sees a video of Black Widow, and he turns back into Banner. Banner logs into the system, and the computer calls him the strongest Avenger, which Thor was like, that doesn't sound right. The Grandmaster sends Loki and Valkyrie to get Thor and Hulk. Loki reads her memories. Turns out she was the only survivor when Hela killed all of the other Valkyries. Banner thinks that if he turns into Hulk one more time, he won't come back. And Valkyrie finds Banner and Thor and brings them to her apartment, I guess. And she already has Loki tied up. Thor names the team the Revengers because they all want revenge, I guess. Valkyrie says the best course is to take a portal to Xandar, but Thor says to take the big one, and it turns out to be named the Devil's Anus. And Banner mentions something about it being a collapsing neutron star and an Einstein-Rosen bridge, which is some scientific talk from the first Thor movie. Banner and Valkyrie keep going, "I feel like I know you." They help Korg start his revolution, and Thor and Loki do the get help trick. Loki betrays Thor, but Thor saw it coming and turns the tables on him. There's this chase scene in the skies where Banner kills Topaz, a Grandmaster's servant, and Korg rescues Loki. Scourge is reluctant to perform his new duties on Asgard, and then the Devil's Anus actually exits right underneath of Asgard. Thor finds the Valkyrie armor and gives it to Valkyrie, and Hela finds the hiding place where Heimdall was keeping everyone, but Heimdall already moved the people, and Thor lures her to the throne room with Odin's staff, and we get that awesome quote about a wise king doesn't seek war, but he must always be ready for it, and then Hela and Thor fight. Everyone goes to the Bifrost Bridge, but they get surrounded by the undead Armni and Fenrir. Hela cuts out Thor's eye, and Banner jumps out of the ship onto the bridge. And it's really funny because this is actually a callback to the Incredible Hulk movie when he jumped out of a helicopter. And then he turns into the Hulk. Loki shows up with Korg on a big ship, and they evacuate the people onto it. Thor has a vision of Odin and unlocks his true power. The hammer was just meant to control his power. And then we cue up Immigrant Song again. Scourge sneaks on board of the ship. Thor figures out that they need to cause Ragnarok to stop Hela. He sends Loki to the vault. Loki grabs the skull and passes the Tesseract. Scourge busts out with his M16s and saves everyone on the ship, sacrificing himself. Loki puts the crown in the eternal flame, and Searcher erupts into his true giant form. Hulk tries to fight him, which is really funny. And then Hulk jumps Thor and Valkyrie up to the ship. Searcher destroys Asgard completely, and he kills Hela in the process. And Thor gets an eye patch. And Loki comes back. And Thor is now the king. Because Asgard isn't a place, it's a people, and they set course for Earth. Post-credit scene, a bigger ship shows up at the end, and it's almost certainly Thanos' ship. And the Grandmaster survives on Sakaar. Black Panther! Came out this year in 2018. I only saw this movie twice, but it's out of the theater, so I am actually just doing this summary by memory and online synopsis. We get an introduction. A vibranium meteorite crashed into Africa, and these five tribes fought over it. Then an herb is affected by vibranium and is used to create the first Black Panther. The Black Panther unites for the five tribes and makes the new nation of Wakanda. The fifth tribe goes up into the mountains. In present times, Wakanda is posing as a third world country while actually being the most advanced country in the world, while also isolating their country from the rest of the world. In 1992, Prince Njobu is working undercover in Oakland, California. Upset with his country's isolationism, he schemes to give Wakandan technology to people of African descent to overthrow their oppressors. He hired Ulysses Klaue to infiltrate Wakanda and steal the vibranium. King T'Chaka found out his brother's actions and confronted him. Njobu threatened to kill Zuri, who is actually spying on Njobu for T'Chaka. T'Chaka kills his brother and abandons his son Eric in Oakland to hide the truth. In present day, following T'Chaka's death in Vienna, his son T'Challa returns to Wakanda to assume the throne. He works with his general, Okoye, to extract his ex-lover from an undercover assignment in Nigeria. Then they go home and he reunites with his mother, Queen Ramonda, and his younger sister, Princess Shuri, who also happens to be super smart. She makes T'Challa a new Black Panther suit. And then at the kingship ceremony, T'Challa is challenged by M'Baku, the leader of the fifth tribe, the Jabari. There's some ritual combat and he uses this herb to remove the Black Panther powers. And T'Challa wins the duel, sparing M'Baku's life. Then he takes the herb to get the powers back and sees his father in a vision. Back in London, Klaue and Eric steals ancient vibranium from a museum. The Wakandans find out about it and they find Klaue will be in South Korea. T'Challa's friend Wakabi urges him to stop Klaue because Wakabi's parents were killed when Klaue raided Wakanda. T'Challa, Okoye, and Nakia go after Klaue at an underground casino in Busan. However, the buyer turns out to be Everett Ross, the same CIA agent from Civil War. Everything then kind of blows up in their faces and a cool car chase happens. They chase Klaue and apprehend him. While in CIA custody, Ross tells them about Eric, aka Killmonger, who then busts Klaue out. Ross is injured and T'Challa takes him back to Wakanda to use their technology to save his life. Shuri makes this joke about having another white boy for her to fix. Eric goes and kills Klaue and takes his body to Wakanda as a token. T'Challa also learns the truth from Zuri about Eric. Eric is then brought before the tribal leaders and reveals himself as Njobu's son and challenges T'Challa for the throne. Ritual combat happens again and Killmonger wins, killing Zuri and throwing T'Challa over the waterfall. He then gets the Black Panther powers and burns the rest of the herbs. Nakia saves one of them. He then enacts his father's plan to distribute Wakanda weapons to peoples around the world. Ramonda, Shuri, Ross, and Nakia go to the Jabari tribe and find M'Baku was taking care of T'Challa, and they give him the herb, and T'Challa goes back to Wakanda and renews his challenge with Killmonger since he didn't die and never yielded. Okoye also turns on Killmonger. Killmonger now has his own Black Panther suit and fights back with the help of the border tribe and Wakabi. Then M'Baku shows up with the Jabari tribe and Ross has to remote pilot a ship to shoot down the ships leaving Wakanda with the weapons. T'Challa and Killmonger fight in the mines until finally T'Challa overcomes his opponent. He takes Killmonger to see the sunset, then Killmonger drops this beautiful line: "Just bury me in the ocean with my ancestors who jumped from the ships because they knew death was better than bondage," and then he dies. T'Challa is now in charge again, and M'Baku is granted a seat at the table. T'Challa establishes an embassy in Oakland in the same building that Njobu was murdered. ending stuff. T'Challa reveals Wakanda's true nature to the rest of the world. In the post-credits, we see a recovering Bucky Barnes. All right, that was a wild ride. Sorry that went so long, but a lot more happened in the second half of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So thanks for listening. So in summary, here is what you need to know going into Infinity War, state of the MCU, if you will. The locations of the 5 of 6 Infinity Stones are now known. The Purple Stone, the Power Stone, is on Xandar with Nova Corps. The Collector has the Red Stone, the Reality Stone. The Yellow Stone, the Mind Stone, is in Vision's head. Doctor Strange has the Time Stone, the green one. And the Blue Stone, the Space Stone, is with Loki on the Asgard refugee ship. The only unknown stone is the orange one, which is the Soul Stone. Faction-wise, the Avengers are split up after the events of Civil War. Tony, Rhodey, and Vision are at the HQ. Doctor Strange and Peter Parker are in New York. Natasha is AWOL. Steve is in hiding with Wanda, Barton, Wilson, and Lang. And Bucky is with Black Panther in Wakanda. Wakanda, as a nation, also just revealed itself to the rest of the world. Thor, Loki, and Hulk, and Valkyrie, and Heimdall are in space on the refugee ship, and the Guardians of the Galaxy are all out in space somewhere. SHIELD as an organization has been completely dismantled. Asgard and its army have been destroyed. The Sorcerer Supreme is dead. So going into Infinity War, our heroes are fractured and their allies and assets are limited. If you're seeing Infinity War this weekend, like me, because I'm awesome, please be considerate and do not spoil this movie for anyone. They went through a lot of effort to keep this movie under wraps, so please be respectful. Thanks for listening and happy avenging.
Booyah!